Hi, I'm Albie. Are we friends now?
Silence.
I mean...
Trexploration.
Hello, and welcome back to Trexploration. I'm Albie.
I'm Chris.
I'm John.
And today, we have a very special guest, once again, for episode 2 of Starfleet Academy beta test. We have the great Steve Shives. How you doing, Steve?
Thank you for persuading me to come back for this different episode. I'm glad to be here again.
For a totally new, different session of an episode.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to say we should have changed our shirts at least, but we should have changed our shirts at
least. No, it's because so much time has passed that we just all happen to be wearing the same thing on the next wash cycle.
This has been laundered, you know?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So. And I watch like the entire season of Penn and Teller Fool Us, and Brooke Burke wears the same every episode. So
this
I don't,
is true.
You know,
maybe she's like Einstein. She just has the one. Or Eddie Munster.
She just has like 20 copies of the same outfit. Yeah.
Or the one I wear tonight.
Cartoon characters—they never change clothes.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Residual image, something like that, right? So we're talking about season 1, episode 2 of Starfleet Academy beta test. We've been talking a while, and I'm excited to talk more about this episode. So, Chris, could you give us the episode recap so we can have a little refresher?
Yes, I can. So, as the title alludes to, the Betazoids are coming. The Betazoids are coming. Starfleet Academy is abuzz about the arrival of a delegation from Betazed, including the Betazoid president, at issue whether or not Betazed will join the Federation. Ever since the burn and the failure of the Federation, Betazed has become increasingly isolationist to the point where it is now surrounded by a defensive shield. Admiral Vance feels that convincing the Betazoids to join the Federation is of paramount importance to getting the United Federation of Planets back on track. So why not hold the negotiations at Starfleet Academy? Grumpy Prez is convinced to come out of his shell. Yes, the president, the Betazoid president, is really grumpy. He's convinced to come out of his shell by a youth movement on Betazed that is clamoring for more off-world contact. And Vance believes the children are the future. Prominent in that movement are the president's two children, including his daughter Tarima Sadal. Caleb is instantly smitten with Tarima, and the feeling appears to be mutual. You figure Tarima would know, but she's not like regular Betazoids. She is so telepathic and empathic that she can be a danger to others, which is why she wears some kind of dongle bobble on her neck to suppress
inhibitor
her
collar.
Abilities.
Inhibitor collar.
Inhibitor collar.
Shock collar.
Shock collar. To suppress her abilities, which sure comes in handy for the ensuing plot complications. Because while Caleb is genuinely interested in Tarima, he is equally interested in getting a map of the space behind the Betazoid shields to aid in the search of his mom. Of course, Tarima finds out about this. There is much teen angst and fatherly scowls, and the delegation decides that the talks are a bust. But just as they're about to leave, Caleb makes a last appeal to Tarima because he really likes her. She can't deny that she likes him, too. Grumpy Prez is convinced to come back to the negotiations, and Vance seals the deal by proposing that the Federation's new seat of government be not on Earth, but on Betazed. All's well that ends well, and bonus, the Betazoid space maps help Caleb get one step closer to reuniting with his mom. The end. I wrote that one. I've seen this episode once about a week ago. So, I mean, tonight when we watched it.
I watched it tonight.
The last time you wore that shirt.
The last time I wore the shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
A week ago.
Exactly.
I think I got the broad strokes on that one. So, yeah, basically this is... if I want to get, I'll give my first impressions because, just coming right off of it, this is the most teen angsty, teeny bopper feeling I've gotten out of this show yet. Not going to say this was the strongest follow-up to the spectacular pilot, but it was still very enjoyable, and I loved a lot of the character beats that we got in this, and I really, really liked the fact that we're seeing more of how the Federation works with Starfleet Academy being juxtaposed against, like, this war college, which we've never heard of before. So I'm guessing like the Makos legacy lives on in this too. It made me think of Enterprise and Jay Hayes, who is one of my favorite characters. So those are my first impressions. Our guest, our beautiful guest, Steve Shives. See, John, you thought it was going to be you.
I never presume.
I'm always, what are your first impressions?
I'm just happy to be here.
First impressions of Beta Test.
I liked it a lot. You know, once upon a time when most TV shows were written episodically, like TV shows are supposed to be, the second episode of a show was actually a really important episode because it was the first episode after the pilot, and you get a sense of what the show is actually going to be like. Because, I mean, the pilot is supposed to give you a little bit of that sense, but the pilot also is usually setting stuff up and introducing you to the characters and kind of putting pieces into place. And so once all of that work is done in the pilot, episode two is, okay, now here's the show. So this is like the first episode where we actually get a chance to figure out, okay, what's this show actually going to be like? And if this second episode is going to be representative of what the rest of the show is going to be like, I'm really going to like this show. It is teen angsty, but I think it works. And, you know, whether people have any particular feelings about like teen soaps for the positive or the negative, that is a channel that Star Trek has never really explored before. And that's something that I'm grateful to see them trying, because I, you know, as much as I love Star Trek and as much as I have loved many of the different versions of Star Trek, one thing I really don't want to see is to see Star Trek just keep repeating itself. So doing Star Trek as a teen drama set at a college, you know, with a bunch of young kids who are flirting and fighting and, you know, and pulling pranks on each other and blah, blah. Like, I'm okay. Let's see how this works as a Star Trek show. And if this is an indication of what that's going to be like, then I think they've got a pretty solid base here. So, yeah, I thought my first impression of it was another really solid episode and a really encouraging episode.
I really enjoyed the episode. This was right up my wheelhouse, because I think I mentioned Vampire Diaries and those type of shows where it's the teen romance and angst and you know, what did you call it? Pretty people with problems, Chris?
Yeah, that's just so you know. Oh, totally. I stole that from Mad TV. Because Mad TV was on the height of like the CWWB, and they it wasn't pretty. It was. The name of the skit, the show, was Pretty White People with Problems. I mean, this, you know, just take out the white people. It's just now just pretty people with problems. Some of them are white.
And some of them, it's hard to tell.
Some of them are half white, half black.
Yes. In fact, yeah, that's true.
That was awesome. Frank Gorshin's daughter, I think. So I think this is what, like, people like me, at least, when we were going into Starfleet Academy, what I was worried about the most, that this is what the show was going to be. That being said, I was super into it, and I thought they did very well. It reminded me of Ilia and Decker. It reminded me of Riker and Troy. But I think it was done better than both of those. Because to me, both of those were like, yeah, okay, it's a drama, and they're trying to fall in love or maybe, you know, flirt or something. But this, I actually felt it. It felt like a good maybe rom-com-ish without so much of the calm. But the romance was there for me, and I just really enjoyed the episode, and I was so surprised. And Zoe Steiner, who plays
Tiramisu. Tiramisu.
You either like Tiramisu or you don't. That surprised me, because I thought she was just like a guest star, right? And now I guess she's part of the cast, if what I'm understanding is right. So I'm gonna really look forward to seeing more from her, because I think she was just another great casting choice. So overall, great. John?
Same. And I've watched it differently. Steve, you're like, well, the second episode is the first episode of the show after the pilot. I was viewing both, I was viewing episode one and episode two as the pilot, you know, because they're, and I think that, you know, the show is kind of doing that too. That's why they're dropping them both on the same night. So it basically, it's like the movie that is the pilot episode. It's kind of how I watched it. And because the end of the actual pilot, they just get to the school. Like, they haven't really done much of anything yet. And they haven't, it seems that with the introduction of the daughter, now they have their core cast. So that's the other reason I'm thinking that I think of it as all of kind of an extended pilot. So I'm looking at it all in the same umbrella.
So what you're saying is they planned on doing a big show covering one and two, but it got too long, so they split it in two.
That's not what I said.
Whoever heard of that?
That's not what I said. People don't do that.
They definitely could have edited it different.
That is a crazy kookamamie idea.
They definitely could have edited it different and made a longer movie. But
you son of a bitch, I'm in. That's just crazy enough to work. But no, I really liked it, and like I said in the last episode that we recorded a week ago, you'd see more of the characters, like evolving.
Yeah.
And the teen. Oh, actually, I kind of liked that. Not just sort of like the teen angst, and they weren't especially angsty. I felt like everybody like they had characters, but I liked that after the pilot. Those two are gonna be a couple, and now you're not really sure, like, because that is that's how it is with, like, you know, in college, like, right. Okay, everybody's, well, not everybody, you know, sorry, a lot of people are good looking, and you don't really know who's
including me, John.
Everybody's kind of flirting with everybody.
Yeah.
And they don't know who, like, oh, I like her, but like that could change in 2 weeks, you know. And so I appreciate that energy too.
Yeah, I know that I was kind of ribbing this one in the kind of halting synopsis. I apologize for that. But it's low hanging fruit for me to make fun of, like, the serious hard left this takes into teen drama. But for all that, what you guys are saying is the absolute truth. It wasn't trite. It was still engaging. It was still fun. It was still, you know, genuinely heartfelt in places. I believed that Tarima and Caleb were actually getting to like each other, getting to know each other. Even though Caleb seemed to have an ulterior motive, there were some lovely little scenes in the show between them. The fact that you could get through it without rolling your eyes saying, okay, when is this going to be over? Mm-hmm. As you would if this were like an episode of The Flash when they're having a heart-to-heart or something. this is that done right. So I was actually much more engaged with it in the moment than I am now, Snarky Chris, reviewing it for a podcast. That's all. And we were remiss in the last episode. I just want to tell people out there, all of our viewers, we want you to tell us what you think of these episodes. Give us your impression of the first episode, the second episode. You can do so right here on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/atrexploration. You can do the comments below. You can comment on our Patreon site. That's patreon.com/trexploration. You can also support the show there. You can also get us on Blue Sky at trexploration.bluesky.social. Email us what you think of these first two episodes of Starfleet Academy, trexplorationpod@gmail.com. Mail us your thoughts, P.O. Box 542, Bayport, New York, 11705. Mail me a little ship, a little Athena. And we want to thank all of the people that support and like and spread the word about this show, including our patrons, the Lifetime member, the Omnipotent Willard.
Omnipotent Willard!
And our crew of intrepid Trexplorers. I usually say that right. Those are our cadets, Listen Linda and Rick Tatro, our Lieutenant Commander Scott Seligman, Cosplay Dad, and Christian Daljo. And, of course, our esteemed Captain Charles from Texas, Captain on the Bridge. Thank you, one and all, for all of your support of this show. Thank you for all of you out there who are watching. And, let us know what you think, because we got a lot more to discuss in this. For me, the high point in this was seeing the Betazoids portrayed in any way beyond farcical. We usually in Next Gen, we got a big heap and helping of Loxwana every season. And then in Lower Decks, I think is when the last time that they did like a Betazoid episode where, but they, there was some chicanery afoot because it was Lower Decks. I can't remember what it was exactly, but it was always at odds to me because it's almost like whenever we saw the Betazoids on Next Gen, Deanna seemed like a completely different type of character. So it wasn't sort of like that monoculture. And they always erred to me on like the side of a little bit goofy. And maybe, again, that was just Majel's part in how she portrayed Loxwana. So this guy that's coming as the president with all this gravity, you know, trying to bring this delegation and sort of the odds. We discussed this earlier about how in the post-burn society of the Federation, everybody is so splintered. This is a first step towards that reconciliation that I think the show is going for that Holly Hunter talks about quite a bit. So I thought that it was actually very interesting. Like Star Trek and politics, you think DS9, right? And you're, oh, we got another Bajor religious political episode. All right. But it's interesting when you're watching it. This one is, yeah, it's very much about politics, about, you know, negotiations. Let's all sit around and talk. What's more Star Trek than that?
My favorite.
But yeah, but it's still, it was still very engaging. So I think that it served to build the larger theme of what I'm seeing in this series so far in a very interesting way, a very satisfying way.
Yeah. I just liked that the Betazoids were different. Whether or not they were serious or silly, that wasn't really, like, I really appreciated when the Betazoids showed up. I was like, oh, they're not like anybody we've ever seen before. And again, that's something that, like, I feel like Star Trek shows used to do just as a matter of course, when a new Star Trek show would kind of pick up something that had been established by one of the previous shows, they would do their take on it. You know, the Klingons in TNG were not like the Klingons in TOS in the movies. Each new show would kind of reinterpret it in their own way. And then at a certain point, Star Trek kind of stopped doing that. And they just use those things for callbacks. And so with this show, it's nice that they bring the Betazoids in, and it's not just an excuse to make references to TNG. Nobody mentions anybody named Troy. They behave differently than Betazoid characters we've seen in other shows. Their whole political deal is totally different. And I'm just like, oh, yes. You know, they're doing their version of it. They're doing their version of the Betazoids. And the political stuff all makes sense. You know, having them become isolationist because of the burn and not wanting to trust the Federation anymore. Like, it's logical. You can understand it. You kind of, you know, you want the Starfleet side to prevail and sort of get through to them and bring the family back together. But you can see where the Betazoids are coming from. It makes sense that they would be reluctant to, you know, lower the force field around their entire section of space, apparently.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's so big you can't see behind it.
It's like they just kind of just walled off their entire part of the galaxy. They're like, nah, we're going to be back here doing our own thing, okay? Just keep moving. The resolution to the negotiation where they decide to put the new Federation capital on Beta Zed, it lands as a meaningful thing. Even if you've never watched Star Trek before, it's not a technobabble thing. It's not rooted in some kind of arcane understanding of like a made up alien culture. Like, no, you get it. They're making a concession. They're
you've
proving...
seen Hamilton. You get it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, oh, there you go. There, and it's like that's something that anybody can understand. Oh, here, we'll show you how much we trust you. We'll show you how much we're committed to having you become one of us again. We'll put the capital of our government on your planet. Like, that makes sense. It's basic and it's easy to understand. And I really dug that about it, too.
I love the Betazoids in this. The chemistry between Caleb and Tarim, how you say it? Tamara?
Tarima.
Tarima?
Tarima. I'll get it eventually. You know how like actors do chemistry tests? And, you know, it's kind of like a pass-fail, and this kind of works. But I think they went off the chart with this because the chemistry was, like, insane for me. And as Betazoids go, I think she's great. Like, I got some kind of feelings because it was like she's too empathic, right? So I was thinking, like, maybe Tin Man. Is that the episode I'm thinking of?
Oh, yeah, that TNG. Tam Elbrun.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he didn't have the thing on his neck to shock him.
Well, they hadn't invented that yet, I guess.
Right, because 29th century. And maybe a little bit of the price was going on because it was like negotiating and going back and forth with Betazeds. I don't know. But I like that this whole thing was like a new take on Betazed and Betazoids and just the characters in general. I liked the fact that the president was deaf. I enjoyed that. And it seemed to be a deaf actor. I don't know his name. Did any of us look that up?
No, I couldn't find it. And I think it was because as of this recording, it hadn't been listed.
Yeah, it's not on IMDb yet. I dated a deaf girl for probably the better part of a year. So I learned a lot of sign language. And the sign language, I really enjoyed seeing that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he did have technology to help him communicate with everybody, but he still used it, and so did his children. I really love that. I wasn't too familiar with some of the signs, so I don't know if he's like British and he's doing BSL or whatever.
Well, maybe he's doing BSL Betazoid.
That might be a thing too. Yeah, I'd like to see like a behind the scenes video. Hopefully, Paramount puts it out, CBS on YouTube or something.
So- is anyone, though, begging the question now that you're bringing up the fact that he's hearing impaired, mm-hmm. in a species that is telepathic, can he hear thoughts? If he's deaf, like physically deaf, can he still hear?
I presume so.
Something in his head.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then why is he signing to his children? Why aren't they just speaking telepathically the way Luxwana would speak to Deanna?
I think
rude.
Even amongst themselves.
He's in a public
I think if
forum.
We hang in there, it might be explained later at some point, probably.
Maybe he does it because Tarima has the shock collar on and she can't.
Oh, yeah. She can't get that's a good point, too.
Yeah.
I apologize for introducing the idea of a shock collar. I don't think
or it's maybe he, maybe he just wants to force his kids to learn sign language.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
He's like, you little bastards, you're not going to coast on this. You're going to learn how to communicate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're not just going to think at each other in front of people.
You're basically an ambassador. You need to be able to communicate with all sorts of people everywhere.
Yeah. There you go.
I think it would have been interesting, though, if they become so isolationist, as they've indicated here, and the president was just using this as an excuse to turn the Federation down. You'd think that maybe they would come and maybe those taboos would no longer be taboo. Maybe they would just be thinking at each other all the time because they're behind their wall. They don't have to worry about it anymore.
Well, but it's also, it's not just him. Maybe that might've been the case, but like he wasn't going to come at all. But basically the kids, the next generation, mm-hmm. no pun intended, was no, we need, like, we don't want this. So he at least needs to appear to be making a real effort. Even if he ultimately doesn't want to say yes, he needs to put on that show for his people and for his kids. So I didn't even think about it, but I'm fine with it.
I do like the fact that him being deaf was treated as just a completely normal thing, and they didn't they felt no need to explain it. They, you know, there wasn't like that scene of like when the little thing flies onto his neck and like starts talking out his signs. There's not like that cutaway scene where somebody goes, "What was that?" And then somebody goes, "Oh, that's a universal translator that he gets." Mm-hmm. Like, no, nothing is explained. It's just, just watch and you'll get it. And that's exactly what happens.
I did like that. And, you know, it was a little bit showy telly because, you know, it was floating there for a while, and then before he talked, it went on there.
It, like,
where normally it'd probably just be on there before the scene started, but then we wouldn't know what was making the sound. Yeah. So, But I appreciate
it. It was late.
Idea.
It was running late. It had to go to the bathroom. Yep. And then, you know, it realized, oh, is he doing that speech now? I better get out there.
You know what?
Because it's sentient, like, again, and it has rights.
Yeah, all the technology is sentient now.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Betazed, they think that, like, this is cutting edge. They're, like, showing it off, but they don't know that they're, like, 200 years behind the times. Like, yeah, we know. We've seen
we've
it.
We've got those.
Yeah,
my kid plays with those. That's not a thing. It's not.
Yeah, my kids.
It's not impressive.
My kids are building those in kindergarten. Now.
Yeah, you're way. You fell behind when you went behind that wall. I'll just let y'all know.
Yeah.
I think it's this episode too that shows a differently abled person in a wheelchair. Also.
Yes, in the audience, there's that shot of yeah.
So, and it's interesting. Yeah. It evokes, you know, being the 99th century. You know, aren't they able to cure everything? Pretty much. You know,
but if that's if you think of it as a disability,
that's
and
true.
Not just a difference,
because yeah. like,
and it's representation. I mean, I said the same thing when certain people complained a little too loudly about the character in a wheelchair in Discovery that one time, and they were like, "It's the future. Why would people be in wheelchairs?" And my answer was because people use wheelchairs in real life.
Yeah,
and the show is made for people in real life to watch it. Like and that's
I, and
the
I would,
answer.
And I would also say. You know, we had wheelchairs 100 years ago, and we have the technology so that we don't necessarily need wheelchairs. But we still have wheelchairs.
Yeah.
Just because the technology exists doesn't mean that everybody has it.
For some people, it's the best option. And why wouldn't that continue to be the case in the future?
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, it could be one of those things like, what was it, Melora, where she couldn't get around because of the gravity or something. So I was going through all the things, or maybe it's a choice because, like I said, I dated a deaf woman. So a lot of the community, given the choice of hearing or not, they wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Yeah, they don't get the, a lot of them don't get the cochlear ear.
Yeah.
Because they're like, no, I'm not broken.
I don't need to see ultraviolet light. You know, I don't need to hear. You know, I'm not missing anything. So I did enjoy that, and it made me think a little bit.
Yeah.
I liked. I also liked how the Betazoids were represented. That, you know, again, because it is this future post-war society, you can kind of rewrite everybody, and it's justified. Mm-hmm. They're not; these aren't the ones that you remember, and it's fine. This is very tangential. I liked. And we didn't really see him do anything until like the very end. But I liked that the brother wasn't a jerk. Because, again, the stereotypical, oh, she's really sweet. This is my brother. We don't hear him. He's going to be the one who's like just like dad and like, how dare you? But he's like, yeah, I'll go for it.
Yeah, go get him.
I liked that the brother was cool.
Yeah.
Like, it was a surprise.
I love that little exchange between the two of them, which is really the only, like, until the very end, it's like almost the only thing the brother even said was when they had like their little exchange. And yeah, when he says like, you know, go get him. And they communicate so much about those characters' relationship and their vibe together, like just in one little exchange. It's such a great, efficient.
And it's funny because it was uniquely Betazoid as well, because he was reading Caleb where she couldn't. So he's reading. And didn't he say something to the effect of he feels safe with you?
Yeah.
And that was a nice touch, too. It must have made her feel good about him. So that's what I'm saying. Again, they did go into the angst thing. You knew there was going to be the breakup and then the reconciliation. You saw that coming from scene one when their eyes first met across the room. There was going to be some Three's Company shenanigans.
Their eyes did meet. There was some major flirting going on.
All right. I've only seen the episode once, so I apologize if I just missed this. But she's like, oh, you were just using me to get the map. Did he know that she had them? I thought that was a thing that she just offered. I didn't know that that was a thing that he knew that she would do or could do for him.
I think what the indication was, and that's where the episode kind of bumps me a bit. They have the sincere relationship or this budding sincerity between them where there doesn't seem to be any ulterior motive in any way. And she does seem to offer up the map to him voluntarily.
Unrequested.
Yeah. But then all of a sudden Grumpy Dad walks in and he's like, oh, this is where you have my daughter. And she's just like, you were just using me. It's like, well, that was a weird left turn. He didn't seem like he was using you. The brother didn't read that off of him in the beginning. It's just like, plot twists for the sake of drama. And that's there was, that's what kind of bothered me about.
I think there were two because show hurdles in the episode that I didn't understand.
I could make it work if you assume a level of subterfuge from Caleb, where he's smart enough to know that, okay, this place exists. I can't find it anywhere. It's probably behind their wall.
Right.
And so this is all like a long con to get her to do it. But I don't think that was the case. So that's why everyone, and he's like, yeah, you're right. I apologize. I guess I'm not, and that's what I'm saying. I've only seen it once. I'm not super clear on if his crime just, you know, I didn't tell you about my mom. I didn't tell you that this is another thing that I want. Or was his crime, I manipulated you into doing this thing that I want, which to me is two different things. And I didn't get the sense that it was the manipulation, but it seems like that's how everyone, including maybe him, is treating it.
I was confused, like I was missing something.
What were the two because show hurdles that you had?
like when they were checking out the whales, right? And everybody comes in and goes, how dare you? Can you believe you did this? Oh, my goodness. Everyone's in trouble. You were looking at whales.
Yeah, what are you doing here? Who invited you into the aquarium?
Exactly. They're in the aquarium watching whales.
Get out of here.
Well, am I the only one who expected her and the whale to have a conversation?
They might have.
Didn't she sense that one of them was pregnant?
Yeah.
Gracie.
I guess I wasn't. And I also wasn't clear on how much her little inhibitor chip was inhibiting her. Mm-hmm. I got the sense that like she's kind of super powerful and can't necessarily control it. And so this like kind of keeps her at the level of other Betazoids. But it might be that it actually diminishes her below them.
Yeah, assuming she was at the level. Cut off almost, maybe.
Could it be? Let me headcanon this. Humanoids have a different brain engram system that Betazoids can pick up on, and that's what she's suppressing, or her shock collar suppresses her from maybe reading too much of. But the whales have completely different brain meats.
Oh, okay.
And she gets some of the whale thoughts a bit easier because goes under the collar. I don't know.
Maybe the whales are just screaming. They're just like, let us out of here. This is a tank. They trapped us here. Let us go.
She's like, can you hear the whale screaming, Caleb?
Do you still hear the terrible screaming of the whales, Tarima?
That was something I wondered. Like, I was wondering, like, is that just open to like the San Francisco Bay and they can come visit that way?
The whales just come in to say hi.
Yeah, or is it part of the ship and is it cetacean observations and they're humpback whales?
I thought
whales
he was taking it to cetacean ops.
Because it's so damn big, that ship.
Oh, that's true. It could have been that, yeah.
So I'm not sure.
Well, and when he said, he introduced it as the whale. I'm like, as in the last one? Or like, this is... I'm serious, like, because initially I was like, I presumed we have whales again. That was the whole point of Star Trek 4, right? We got whales back.
Yeah, we f***ed it up again.
Sorry. In the Lower Deck comics, they gotta fix it again. So they got to go back to San Francisco again. And they keep trying to get George and Gracie, but I think it's Boimler that says, no, you can't get George and Gracie because that's how we fixed it the last time. We got to get different whales.
So I'm assuming that was my misinterpretation when he said the whale, as this is the American Eagle. It's not the only one. Like,
right.
This isn't an example of.
Ah, okay.
But yeah. When I first heard it.
Well, she's pregnant, so she can't be the only one.
Well,
unless it's parthogenic.
It's the future.
Yeah, exactly. Whales do it different now.
You don't need a male for these things.
Whales do it different now.
Yeah.
the other because show hurdle.
That's my documentary. Whales do it different.
Whales do it different. It's the future. Whales do it different now.
Yeah, 99th century. The other because hurdle, even though I didn't understand the motivation of why they got upset with each other, the acting in that scene, I totally bought and believed. And when she said, okay, and just walked away, I was like, I've had that happen to me.
That was
really
good.
Yeah, that was so good. Yeah, like, okay.
Yeah.
And she walked away. It was good. I got to talk about the fashion. The Betazoids, all those white outfits were like, tight. They were gorgeous. Mm-hmm. The costuming is amazing. It's and, of course, Tarima. Did I get it this time?
You got it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That red dress. Oh, my goodness.
I knew you were going to be
there. Should be like Emmys going out for costume.
And she knew it. She knew it. She was flaunting.
Oh yeah, and she was like, "Look at me."
She's like, "Huh?
Yeah,
like, yeah, yeah. We got it."
But man, the fashion on point.
Which is something that Star Trek hasn't always been super good at. That is something that I will give, regardless of the individual like quality of like the shows as drama, which has been uneven. The new generation of Star Trek shows, like the costuming. Not just for the uniforms, but for civilian clothes and stuff, has been, for the most part, really good. Like, we haven't really got any, you know, they all just wear jumpsuits kind of thing, you know.
The Jake Sisko Blue Beetle cosplay outfit.
Oh, poor Jake. For, like, the first, like, 3 or 4 years, they dressed him in the, like, what? Please, just let him wear a shirt and a pair of pants. Please.
No, onesies. We wear onesies on this station, young man.
Yeah.
My theory was, instead of going to the tailors, he went to the upholstery shop because he can't read Bajoran. And they just did their best.
And they didn't have the heart to tell him because he's the commander's son.
He's
they're like,
just commander's just son. Okay, let's make him
do it. Just do it.
Just dress him in something. Just weave something.
It's actually Nog is the one that pushed him there because he was betting the other Ferengis that he could make the stupid human
dress. Yeah, watch this. Wait till you see what he wears tomorrow.
And Garrick tried to tell him, but nobody trusts Garrick. He's like, I'm telling you.
Right.
Taylor, this is not clothes. Like, okay, whatever, Garrick.
In this case, I'm just a simple Taylor.
That's a slipcover, dude.
That's Chris, funny. Write this book, please.
Walking around in a plastic slipcover for a couch.
Oh, my goodness. So, it's funny. It just occurred to me now because I saw the dress and I knew, Albie, that you would love the dress. But
my God,
now that we're talking about it, this is like it's like almost Bill Thies level with the patches and the holes. And it's almost like a TOS kind of What Little Girls Are Made Of level dress. So, I guess we'll give it points for that. So,
yeah, that needs to be in a museum, a Star Trek museum at some point on a mannequin, I think.
What I loved, again, is the fact that we have the character who I called, you know, the douche bro, douche bro. His name is... Hello.
Is that the fish guy that can go outside of the ship?
Yeah, it's the fish guy go out the ship. So, yeah, that's Cadet Darum Raimi. And the fact that they made Raimi and Caleb... into roommates, I thought was another thing that on the face of it just seemed like ludicrous for the sake of creating drama. But
Luda!
I think it worked. I think it was pretty funny. I mean,
yeah.
And the fact that they bring the brother in, all of a sudden the brother is so staid during like the delegation. He's so gentle with his sister. Then he gets into that dorm room and he turns into like the biggest dude, bro, I break stuff. This is what I do, bro. And that's where, you know, in the last episode, I was talking about the universal cultural translator. It's a little too much. It's just like, well,
I didn't take it so much as he is himself a dude, bro. He is a goofball and he's trying to relate to this dude ball that he thinks is super cool.
That's what I got out of it.
He's a goofy kid, but he couldn't be goofy in front of his dad.
Exactly. He's away
he's
from
goofy with the
now.
Sister. His sister knows the real him.
Yeah.
And so right now he's pretending again because he's trying to fit in. It's like, oh yeah, I work out too, bro. I'm just like you, man. But he's clearly not.
And he's
a goofy guy. And here he can, in the hallowed halls of Starfleet Academy, he will get to be the goofy guy that he is.
Yeah, he had that excitement because he thought he was going to spend the rest of his life behind that barrier around their wherever section of space. Yeah. And now he's just out and exploring and he's in this new school and he's making new friends and he's just excited to be there. I love that energy.
Yeah, he's living a dream right now.
Yeah. So one of the many great character beats. You guys were talking about how much you love the fact that Tig is on this show.
Yeah.
And this is the first appearance that she has. And it's such a substantive lecture that she gives to the kids. And I found that level of genuine interaction throughout this episode in many different ways. Mm-hmm. Again, showing that this is not just like a teen drama. This is something that has real substance behind, is trying to put forth certain ideas. So, I mean, but Tig, her delivery is just is fantastic.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Her deadpan is perfect, and they really have, I mean, it's clearly that this character was written for her, and and everything is done so thoughtfully, you know, to your point, Chris. Like, it's not just, well, let's have Jet Reno on the show because people remember her from the last show. It's like, no, she's contributing something. I think the class we see her teaching is temporal mechanics, which makes sense because she's a time traveler. So who better than to teach that class than someone who, you know, which I think she actually says during her lecture, she's like, I shouldn't even be here. I was born, whatever, 900 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, but everything is done with such thought. And the, I'm going to have to look it up. I can never remember her name, but, Gaia Violo. That's a name that I saw on the opening credits. She is actually the creator of the show.
Yes.
Mm. And what's important about that is she's never worked in Star Trek before.
Wow.
And that, I think, is part of what makes this show work so well, is that the people make, and I mean, there are familiar names in it too. There are people who are producers and writers on it that worked on Discovery and have worked on Strange New Worlds. Like, it's still the same regime, but it's the voice of the show and the premise of the show was created by someone who is new to the franchise, who has never done a Star Trek show before. So they're coming in with fresh eyes. They're not trapped in the box of, you know, what do Star Trek fans want? Or what is a Star Trek show? And, you know, what you know, points do I have to hit so that it qualifies as the right thing? Like, it feels like it's taking a lot of familiar pieces, but doing such fresh and interesting things with them. And I think a lot of it is because it's a new voice. It's someone who I don't know what the story is. I don't know how, you know, Gaia Viola was brought in. I don't know if they... you know, somebody, if she just pitched the show and they said, sure, let's do it. Or if they knew they wanted to do a Starfleet Academy show and they picked a writer that they thought would be good at it. I have no idea, but I'm really glad that the show that, I mean, I'm definitely not as anti Alex Kurtzman as a lot of Trekkies are. I think he's on the balance. He's done a perfectly fine job as the head of the captain of the ship, but it's nice that it's not another show, you know, co-created by Alex Kurtzman and Akiva Goldsman, that it's a new voice. It's a new set of eyes. I think that really, really makes a difference.
Yeah, it's funny because, Albie, you said one of the things that you were convinced about when a lot of this iteration, this era of Trek, is that it seems like there are people in the room purposely who don't know anything about Star Trek to the detriment of the shows. Steve, it's an interesting point where you think, like, this fresh take also is something that makes this show better, where it could, I talked about early in the first episode where there's so much going on. It all should have gone horribly wrong, but it didn't. Like, I feel like the show is just somehow blessed. Like, everything is just coming together here. So, well, I mean, John, I kind of interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No, and like in so many things, it's all about like moderation, right? It's all about the balance of it, because one of my favorite things about this episode, well, there's a couple I liked a lot about this episode, and the more I think about it, the more I get, because I had a rating in mind, the more I think, well, actually, you know what, I should raise that higher, because I actually really enjoyed it. But I liked the premiere was mostly on the ship, and it had, you know, it was dark with the red lighting and the swirly cameras and the cameras and the thing. And it was all that again. And I was like, okay, I guess this is just what it is now. And then when this episode didn't do that, this episode is well lit. Notice the cameras move like, you know, they're not trying to prove anything. That's what it always feels like to me. It's like, they're always trying to look at what the cool thing we can do. We'll swoop the camera. I'm like, we know you can, but should you?
You don't have to.
I think that corkscrew camera, that they use, it's like it's the 21st century equivalent of a star wipe, because they just always.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like we've seen enough.
Yeah, you don't need to do that every time.
And like one of the things that I really enjoyed about this episode, and again, I'm not as deep in the Star Trek lore, but
not even, I guess you call them cameos or references, because it, we're presuming these aren't the exact same characters, but there is a character that looks like Rock Talk. Maybe exactly it is Rock Talk. Like Rock we don't Talk. Know how long yeah. she lives. That's I presume true. It's not. There's a character that looks like a Peanut Hamper. There's a kid, you know what I'm saying? It makes sense that they're there because it's Starfleet Academy. That makes sense.
If you read the credits, you find out the name of that exocomp. Did anybody read it?
No. What's the name of the exocomp?
Almond Basket.
Oh my God.
Almond Basket.
So good.
Yes.
So
Serenity,
good.
My daughter is in love with Almond Basket.
It's so, and that's
she's like, we gotta print that. We gotta paint that. We gotta make that.
Like you were saying in the last episode, Steve, like if you know what this is about, if you know, like the medical tricorder, if you get the reference, then awesome. But nothing hinges on whether you get the reference or not.
Right.
They're just walking past the camera. Oh, there's a bunch of different kinds of, and like that, the half black, I can't remember the name of the species, but the half black, half white, like there's
the Gortians.
The
Gortians.
The Frankolites.
What are they called?
I was kidding.
I don't think they ever. Well, the name of the planet was Charon. So are they Charonians? I'm not sure if they ever gave them a species name.
I liked that being so far in the future lets you reset things, and all of the species. It feels kind of racist to call them species hybrids. But all of the, like, you know, like the first officer is perfect. It's perfect. She's half Klingon, half
Jem'Hadar.
Jem'Hadar. Yeah. And she's funny. It's perfect.
Funny. She's so great.
And she's funny by being half Klingon, half Jem'Hadar. Mm-hmm. Like, that entirely fits her.
And she's played by a stand-up comedian. So I'm sure that helps.
Well, there you go. I didn't know.
Yeah, her name is Gina Yashiri.
Yeah, she's great. Just like Tig is a stand-up comedian. And they're
great.
Again, great casting.
The whole show is a lot funnier than I expected it to be, which is such a wonderful surprise. And willing to be goofy. Like, there are like plots and that are just goofy that I love it. Yeah.
I mean, they make Gina's character, the Commander Thok.
I hear the F word every time.
Laura Thok.
I might have to bleep that out.
And will I?
They make her more of a drill instructor. Like, you feel like, you know, like Starfleet Academy, you think it's going to be all about understanding and coddling and meritocracy and all that. And she's like, no, drop down and give me 20. And you put your luggage on his back. That was in the pilot.
Yeah.
You know, when she made Caleb do the push-ups because he was given sass. And when she was just intentionally trying to break that girl when they were doing the drills, and she even copped, you know, we're not at the War College, we're different than the War College, but they have so much that they can teach us. They have the fact that there's now this whole separate wing of this War College. I wonder if it's going to have like the equivalent of like the Army Navy game at some point.
You never know
as the show goes on. because it's just such an interesting, like, they would have some kind of advanced training facility for a culture that is just coming out of such a time as the Burn. And that's not something that I've ever seen cop to in Star Trek outside of Enterprise and the Makos.
Well, and also what I love about the War College is it does two things. First of all, for anybody who cared about this, it plugged a little hole in Discovery's jump to the 32nd century when they established that, we haven't had Starfleet Academy for however many, but there's still Starfleet and there's still officers. So you might think, well, where are these people coming from if you don't have an academy? How are you making new Starfleet officers? And so in this show, we're like, they didn't have the academy, but they had this thing called the War College, and that's where people went. And it was, you know, the priorities were different, and it was a different kind of training, but that's where the new, you know, that's where the Starfleet officers were coming from. Okay, so that explains that. And it's this brilliant little reversal where even though we as people in the audience are more familiar with Starfleet Academy as like a thing that we know has existed in Star Trek, because of the situation in this show, and the Academy has been gone for a long time and is just now starting back up, even though they're the more familiar name to us, they're the underdog in the show because they're the upstart. So it makes it, and you know, in a college movie or a school movie, you know, you're supposed to root for the underdog. You're not supposed to root for the rich students in the preppy frat. You're supposed to root for the scrappy kids who formed their own frat just now. And, you know, it's like, and that's kind of what. Yeah. And that's kind of what the show has been able to do with Starfleet Academy by saying, oh, it's been a long time. This is the first class we've done in, you know, 100 years. And even though everybody watching the show who is a Star Trek fan has heard of Starfleet Academy, in this show, they're the new guys. So, you know, they're the ones that have to fight up, and it's great.
I can't believe it wasn't until, even though I think they literally say it in this episode or some other episode, throughout this episode, I didn't really understand the whole war college thing. Or maybe I just wasn't paying close enough attention. I didn't get that at all until the very end, which was like, oh, she joined the war college. It's like, what do you mean? Like, what's this? Yeah. Oh, that's a different thing. And that is explored later. But like, no, you're right. It is literally the jocks and the nerds.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is super. That's college.
Yeah.
That's college.
Yeah.
To me, I got like a Section 31 vibe. Maybe it was all the black leather, but maybe that's what evolved from Section 31. That might have been all that was left after the burn.
Let's hope
something.
So.
Something like that.
Let's hope that's all that's left of Section 31.
Yeah, just leave Section 31 alone. No, nobody else knows what to do with it. After
not
this
the movie
just leave
per
it be.
Se,
just don't
but
touch
in
it.
General, you know.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because there's always that question about, you know, is Starfleet military? And obviously it's military-like, but
it's
and
kinda.
They fight all the battles. But now you have these people in black leather that are really going to fight the battles maybe. And maybe now the Starfleet can move back to being more scientists. And exploration.
Mm-hmm. True.
I don't know.
True. I think that's a good. It's maybe setting up the juxtaposition between the two, and the fact that you said, Steve, that the Academy cadets are the underdogs here, but for good reason. They could also be out of their depth in the sense that they want to live up to that old Starfleet ideal about peace, love, exploration, but the galaxy might still be a little bit too rough of a place to accommodate that yet. So you're going to need a vanguard of maybe something that's a little bit more forceful to help pave the way, which is kind of an oxymoron. Like if you want to build consensus and start a federation, well, you still have to deal with unsavory characters like Paul Giamatti's Rucka. So how do you thread that needle? It'd be interesting to see how and if they play with that this season, since they're introducing that element, that more militaristic, I don't know if they're really bellicose, but I guess that they have to at least be boots on the ground, battle ready. It's a war college. I mean, it's right in the name. And so how do you reconcile the two? I hope that they maybe go into that, maybe make it a bit more interesting.
And if I'm just a citizen in this world, in this reality, I'm going to trust the war college more. Like I wouldn't just send my kid to Starfleet when if the war college weren't there. And in fact, that's basically the crux of the negotiations. Is okay, we need more military power. If you want us in, we need more of a say and we need more military power, like, you know, at our disposal. Because that is, they do have to kind of fight their way back from the brink. I'm like, yeah, the burn is done, but they're still, they have to rebuild, you know, the foundations of the society that they knew.
Yeah, the last time we saw anything going on in this time frame, they were fighting Orion Syndicate pirates and then the Breen. So it's still a very rough and tumble galaxy.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of hurdles to be faced. So I think that Disco leaned into that a little bit too much because they just needed to have the quote big bad of whatever season that they were going on. I love that so far, I mean, besides Braca is a more an individual nemesis for Caleb, And it's not this overarching villain yet that I've seen that is like a threat to the fleet, which gets to be, it's too big. It's too impersonal.
Yeah.
Well, and it's been done to death.
Exactly. I mean, when even Lower Decks was doing it like multiple times, it's like, do we need to? And even though I love this show, I mean, Prodigy did it too. And Prodigy mostly got away with it. But, you know, there was still that sense of, do we need to do this again? Like, does there need to be a galaxy-wide threat for the heroes to solve again?
It gets old.
Can we please do something else?
Yeah, you get numb to it. So it ends up feeling like nothing, even though it's supposed to feel like everything. I think the one thing we didn't talk about yet between the two episodes was Rebecca Quinn, Becky Lynch. What did you think of her?
I mean, what does she have? Like two lines?
Yeah.
Who is that?
She's a wrestler. She's in the, she's one of the helm. No, she's the communications officer on the bridge.
I think
right? She's one of the communications off on one of the side stations.
Lieutenant Yah.
Lieutenant
no
Yah.
No vaccine. Yeah. No Lieutenant Yah.
Yeah. She barely has any lines. It was funny to me because like as a wrestling fan, I've heard for a while that she was going to be in the show. And I didn't think she was going to be like the star or anything, but I figured, well, you know, she'll have a couple, like she's barely in it at all. And it kind of makes the wrestling people seem a little pathetic. They're like, oh wait, well, Becky Lynch is going to be in Star Trek. Isn't that cool? Yeah. Okay. Sure. I'll check that out. She's in it for like 10 seconds.
She did take her own bump when the bridge blew up. Like,
that's
like
true. That's true. So, but yeah, I thought she wrestled in Star Trek inspired gear on Raw this week, which again, ooh, I thought, I mean, she's a heel. So it makes sense that she would like make a huge deal out of it, even though she's barely in the show, but yeah, like as a brand crossover thing, it's a little pathetic. It's like, she's in the show for like a minute.
Get people to check it out. I guess.
But I mean, at least when The Rock guest starred in that episode of Voyager once upon a time, he wasn't in that episode a whole lot either, but at least he had like something memorable to do for like the 2 minutes he was in it. Mm-hmm. With Becky Lynch, it's like, oh, look, who's that? Is that Becky? Oh, I think she's
on the crew, right? She could show back up at any time.
I'm sure they might give her something else to do in the future. Yeah, I mean, we've only seen, you know, a couple episodes. She might have something else to do later on.
Pretty good at something. I know Luce Braca waved at her and introduced himself.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay,
that's what that was.
Maybe that's something, I don't know.
There
I'm
you go. Yeah, that was her. Yeah.
Conspiracy. But
maybe they used to date. Maybe there's a history there.
Maybe. I feel like she's a double agent, but.
Probably. You think she's going to turn heel?
I was going to say, Steve, you called her a heel, so you only think that she's shady because of her wrestling persona.
Oh, right.
You think the kayfabe is going to go into the 32nd century is what you're telling me.
I do. I think she's going to pull out a foreign object and she's going to betray the captain.
She's gonna replicate a folding chair.
Exactly. She's gonna pick up her chair from her station on the bridge.
Yeah.
And it's gonna fold like a folding chair. Inexplicably. And she's just gonna crack her on the back with it.
All of a sudden a cage materializes around her.
A cage material out of nowhere. Why do we have this? What is this?
It's programmable matter, bitch. Bam!
Nice. You know, that could become her thing. Like Worf always trying to shoot the view screen. She could just always have the folding chair at the ready.
Mr. Worf, do you intend to fire a hole in the view screen?
But I'm hoping she gets more to do. But, you
know. So. I was surprised by how much they gave her, quite frankly. So, I mean,
of course, she's kind of a nothing character. I mean, they establish like the names and the basic jobs of the bridge crew, but the show is obviously not about the bridge crew. So they'll just kind of pop up, I guess, when needed, and it's mostly about the kids.
And that's true. If she wasn't Becky Lynch, I don't think we would have noticed the character at all.
No.
So
I wouldn't have because the only reason I know Albie is because you going on and on about her. So
you put her on the thumbnail and you get views, you know?
Yeah. So.
And it also, again, this show is a wonderful concept. It's a school, but it's also a ship. So presumably when it's doing a ship thing, if they, hey, let's go on a field trip and we just like, they don't have to get on the bus. They just change the building and they let's go explore this nebula or whatever. Mm-hmm. Presumably when they're in ship mode, she might be, she's on the bridge again and they got more to do, but when they're in school mode, less so.
You know, you just reminded me, we mentioned earlier about you know, just the general concept of, oh, it's, and how well they use that idea of, well, it's a ship, but then it lands in San Francisco and it's the school. On a practical level, that's just brilliant too. Like, I remember when I was watching it, I thought, oh, they can just use the same sets. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all the same. They've built in a reason to be cheap and just oh yeah, we're taking the ship into space. We don't, of course, it's all going to look exactly the same.
It's still your same dorm room, but we're in space
now.
It's
the same thing. yeah. It's like, I mean, there's like a technical side to me that's just like, oh, that's such a great idea. They didn't have to build like separate sets for the school. They just said, no, it's all in the ship.
Yeah. And they just made them bigger and better.
And to your point about the costumes, someone was talking about the costumes, like, they are well done, but it's not like, you know, I felt like they got super elaborate on Discovery mm-hmm. and Strange New Worlds and like, you know, the, you know, 8-inch or, you know, 2-foot collars and everything sparkly. And if you zoom in 1,000 times, you'll see that every sequin is a Starfleet insignia.
Oh God, they go nuts like, for that stuff.
It was too, it was like, you don't need all that. And
like, you don't need to have little Starfleet symbols on the shirts, like 1,000
guys,
times.
Guys, wait, you missed it then. Because if you see the uniforms that they wear on the side, they have like a relief cutout from the armpit.
Yes.
That bells out to Starfleet Delta.
I did see that.
If you see in Captain Holly Hunter's quarters, when they sit in whatever her office is, behind Caleb is just like, it looks like pressed aluminum or stamped aluminum. Rows and rows of Starfleet Deltas.
And
it's still over-textured and over-designed as any new Trek has ever been.
I am not dissing the Starfleet Delta. I'm just saying, like, in terms of the costuming, you're like, we can keep production values low because they could reuse the same set. They're in school uniforms. You know what I'm saying? Yes. Everybody's in school uniforms. So, yeah, like, when Della gets to visit or whatever. But for the most part, you know, it's all pretty standard, or they're in their underwear, they're in their like their workout clothes or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a super elaborate.
They're gonna have to blur out the Under Armour logos on the stuff.
There still is a bit of it though.
That's everything. But I mean, unfortunately, that's everything. Like not even just movies. Like, I mean, it still bothers me that when you watch The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, it says The Late Show with Stephen Colbert on his desk. Like, are we going to forget what show we're watching? Like, it's like it seems that everything is overbranded. You know, everything is overbranded.
Because people watch stuff in 30-second chunks. Well,
I was going to say, that's for the YouTube.
Yeah. So you need you need that immediate hit of recognition.
It's a little much when, like, you know, like John said, like, you zoom in on the costume, like you zoom in on Superman's costume, and there's like 1,000 little S's, and it's like, what are you doing?
Speaking of Stephen Colbert, I did not know that he was the voice.
That's
of
right,
the,
yeah.
The computer,
the computer voice, that yeah. Nice. And he gets some funny lines too.
I think they call him the Digital Dean.
Yes, yeah. That sounds right.
Something like that.
It's a great comic beat between scenes.
He's like a cross between Majel Barrett and like the dean from Community, where he just these random announcements.
Yeah, or like the announcements on MASH.
That's what I thought of too. Yeah. The speaker gags on MASH.
Yeah, that's similar to that. Yeah,
but then when it's time to be serious in a crisis, he's serious. So. I like that. It's nice. And I knew he was going to be on the show, but the first time I watched the episode, it was halfway through until I realized that's who he was. So
yeah,
but I didn't realize until I saw the credits. I was like, oh, yeah, that is who that was.
Okay, cool. Well, we've kept this man, Steve Shives, a couple days now, 2 weeks in a row. So I think we should start wrapping up. Do we have crushes and favorite parts of the episode? Steve, who was your episode crush?
Who was my episode crush? I'm probably not the only one who's going to say it, but it's got to be Zoe Steiner as Tarima. She was she was terrific. I thought she gave a great performance, and I really liked her character, and I really liked her chemistry with Caleb especially. So, I'll go with Zoe Steiner as my crush. All right.
John, and, did you have a episode crush? Sorry.
No, you're saying Steve?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
You could have kept talking because I don't really know. Like, I mean, I do. Like, here's the thing. Like, I'm going to, you know, I don't know what the rules are, but I'm going to, like, I loved the chemistry between everybody and everybody. Like, I loved Holly Hunter, but I loved her, like, you know, sparring with the dad, with the Betazoid dad. I loved the Betazoid dad sparring with what's his name? The Obed, like the
Admiral Vance.
Admiral Vance, yes.
Yeah.
Obviously, our what seemed to be our romantic leads had great chemistry. Caleb and Holly Hunter's like, will you trust me? No. I mean, yes. I mean, no, kind of. Like, the interaction, the interplay between everybody, yeah, I thought was great. So I'm not gonna pick a favorite. Everybody killed it.
All right. My crush, Zoe Steiner, Tarima Siddell. I think, you know that meme, like, find someone that looks at you like this person looks at them. Find someone who looks like at you like Zoe Steiner looks at everybody. I mean, what she has just got that look. Oh my god! So, Chris,
I'm going to do my episode crush and my favorite part of the episode, since that's where we're headed next. So I'll segue into that. My episode crush in this is Tig, because she just stole the show. Mm. And yeah, it was fun to see her. It was fun to see her interact with the students and teach them lessons, and not like speak to them on their level respectfully, but mm-hmm. also challenge them to think differently. And it was just so refreshing, and so it was such a nice sequence, very well written. And of course, she makes everything come alive. So Tig is my episode crush, but obviously, the part of the episode, the most important part of the episode that we haven't talked about yet, which was my favorite part of the episode, was the duet from the Magic Flute.
Yeah.
That the doctor, the Papageno duet. So the fact that they built an entire like duet, aria duet, into a scene of Star Trek so seamlessly that it didn't stick out. It wasn't like obtrusive. It was just a perfect backdrop to everything that was going on. But the opera itself also had a chance to shine. It wasn't just like Muzak in the background. It was so there you get the doctor doing his thing again. And I don't know what kind of alien he was singing with, but whoever that woman was, if that was her, because it did sound like Picardo doing the tenor part.
I'm sure it was.
Whoever the soprano is that they got for that, she was fantastic. It was a very, very, very nice rendition of that aria. So that is by far my favorite part of the episode.
What was that from? I figure you would know.
Magic Flute.
Oh, okay.
Mozart. It's Mozart.
It said in the credits that the soundtrack will be out.
Anyway, so I think it's Mozart because I heard them say Papageno. So Papageno is a character.
A lot of
Mozart.
Pa in it.
Yeah, Papageno and Papagina is the he meets Papagina.
Was there the Magic Flute? Yeah.
Was there a thematic reference that like that goes along with this episode as far as like what's happening?
Only because the Magic Flute has a lot of like farcical romance. So I think it's sort of that tete-a-tete, that will they, won't they. It's sort of, again, the relationship tension. That's why it kind of dovetailed in.
Mm-hmm. While that's happening on the floor below. That's mm-hmm. nice.
Yeah.
And it also turns to be like, I think it's diegetic to non-diegetic to diegetic again, because during the scene, you're actually forgetting that they're singing the opera. And then at the end, when it comes back, you're like, oh yeah, they're still singing the opera. And I've been hearing it the whole time.
It was like 10 minutes, I think.
But it fits in so perfectly. I loved it. Yeah, that was great. Yeah. Steve, first. Favorite part of the episode?
I love those war college assholes. Especially the asshole Vulcan.
Yeah, she's a jerk.
I love asshole Vulcans, and this was and show me an asshole Vulcan, and I'm gonna be like, yep, I like that.
I need that in a 90s rock song.
Asshole. An asshole Vulcan. Yeah. The name of my college improv group, the Asshole Vulcans.
My favorite part of the episode was the romance between Tarima and Caleb. I just loved it. It was it made me feel like I was really there, and I felt the emotions. The only bad thing about it was I think they did so good. It kind of broke the glass. It kind of like made my yum a yuck for the Deanna and Will stuff in the beginning of Next Gen, because I'm like, that's what it should have been. But it wasn't. It wasn't up to snuff. But these guys really did it the way I liked it and loved it. So that was my favorite part.
You forgot, John,
what's your favorite part?
That's fine. I wasn't really sure about my favorite part.
See, this is
the theme of the evening. You know what? I'm going to say, again, I liked a lot of this episode. I've already called out the cameos, like the surprise appearances. Loved Tig. Loved the opera. Loved the chemistry. I'm going to say, lest they fall victim to falling to the sands of time and we all forget. My favorite part was when he spilled the goo on himself.
Oh, yes.
Chekhov's gun goo. Chekhov's goo. And
great.
So yes. He spilled it on himself. He was immediately like, I guess like the medical hologram or whatever had to like, you know, neutralize it or whatever.
Shaving
and him. It wasn't a thing. Like in a lesser show, that would have been a whole plot. I was expecting that to be a whole plot. Let's go, okay, don't get this on you. It'll bond, blah, 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 blah. You know, this whole speech about like how bad it's going to be. And then he spills it. Like, nope, done. Yeah. And you just made a mess. That's it.
But the thing is, he didn't spill it. The cadet spilled it on him.
Yeah. He bumped it. He bumped it.
Bumped it in each other. Chocolate in the peanut butter.
Yes. I'm saying I love that it was built up like it was going to be a thing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a thing. Because there were more important things happening, and it was enough to they made the joke, and it was done.
Yeah,
and they milked it even honestly farther than they should have. Not in that they milked it too long. Like I'm surprised this is still funny, but like every time you went into a new room, somebody else gave him shit for it, which was great. I'm like, dude, just change your shirt. I'm running late. I don't have time to change my shirt. You can teleport, whatever.
You can beam a new shirt. You can beam it. That's the future.
Yeah, just walk through that thing again.
That's right. A because show, but I didn't mind it at all.
Oh, that reminded me of my favorite line. I think where it goes to the next scene where they're outside, and she says, "You're literally on the fence."
That was
cute. That was cute.
The writing was top notch.
Fenceonomics.
So, Albie, this is where we usually get a trek and tell. I don't know that I have anything or we have anything as we can go along.
You just opened up that archer that you got.
Yeah, we have the archer. So if anyone hasn't seen it, I have an archer thing where I did an unboxing. So you can watch that on. We have a new video.
That should be up by now.
Yeah, it should be up
by
now.
When that releases.
Yeah. So that's my trek and tell. But did you have anything you want to show or do you want me to start wrapping it up?
Steve, did you have something?
I have something. I went and grabbed something because you told me it was expected of me. And I want to be a good show guest. And
you have been an amazing show guest both weeks. So, thank you.
Yes, both of the weeks. Separate shows that we have done. Shows.
Thanks for raising the bar, Steve.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I'll next time I'm on, I'll totally half-ass it, I promise.
Whatever.
I actually got this just recently for a video I did, but it's a replica TOS communicator.
Sweet.
And because I did one of my Starfleet Jobs videos on my YouTube channel.
I love those.
And I wanted the guy that I played to have like an old school communicator. And I thought, well, I'll just go on eBay and get one. And that's what I did. And I was thinking about it earlier when you said, hey, we're going to do a trek and tell. And I thought, well, I can just show this thing. And I thought, man, how cynical I have become in my old age, because I got this for that video. And then it's just been like in the box in my closet ever since. And I thought, when I was like 10 years old, I would have murdered somebody for one of these. I would have, if I saw somebody in my class, like walking around with this, I would have pushed them down on the playground and beat their ass and taken it from them just so I could have it. And now I'm like 45 and I've got it. And I'm like, yeah, it's neat. It's fine. Whatever. You know,
I've outgrown it, I guess, but. I'm looking at it. I was like, okay, but does it work? Because we got Bluetooth. You can actually get one.
Yeah, it doesn't. No, yeah, that's the thing. You can get, I mean, it makes like noises and stuff.
That's what I'm saying. That's how cynical I've become. I'm like, yeah, but okay, it's cool. But it doesn't actually work, right? You can get one.
You know what? One of my best friend Jason Harding, who I co-host a couple of podcasts with, he got one of the ones that like you can pair it to your phone.
Yeah.
And he tried to call me on it and it didn't work.
So cool.
He called me and I was like, hello, hello. And I couldn't hear anything. And he hung up and he called back like a minute later. He's like, yeah, I tried to talk to you on my communicator and it didn't work. So, whoops.
Well, it's not the 23rd century yet.
Exactly.
That's true. We haven't. Massive technology.
Cool. Yeah. I remember being 10 years old looking at the technical manual and just imagining having one. So, but you're right. Mine, I don't know where mine is. So, but,
and I want the and it's like,
oh yeah, those TNG kind, yeah.
There's a Playmates one that actually worked. I think came out in the 90s.
I used to have one of those. I don't even have
so
the desire to get one.
Technology still wasn't there yet.
Yeah,
big plastic. Okay, John Irons, beautiful John Irons. Final thoughts and ratings out of 5 wacky objects from the episode. We'll go John, Steve, me, and then Chris to bring us home.
Okay, I really like this episode. Like I said, I was actually going to give it, I gave the last one a 4.5. I was going to give this one a 4. But the more I talked about it, the more I realized I liked it. And I do still kind of consider it part of the pilot. So I'll maintain, I might even give it a 5. No, because the 4.5. I'll keep it at the 4.5. I'll give it 4.5. And I was hoping nobody would mention this so I could use it. 4.5 reverse high heel shoes.
Oh, those are nice.
Those like the Beta Z where it's not on the heel, it's like under the sole.
Oh, yeah.
It was, those are cool. Super cool. And they didn't make a thing about it, but they showed it many times just so that you know how cool it is.
Yep. Made me think the engineering behind that, is it real or did they have to CG a green part out? I don't know.
Oh, and also, and going back to cameos, I don't think they showed his face, but there was a Kelpian who walked by in the hall and you could tell the Kelpian did the arm swaying thing from
behind.
That
was great.
I really want to watch this episode again now, the more I talk about it. So 4.5. Really good.
Nice. Steve.
I'll go 4 again. I'll give it the same as I gave the pile. I'll go 4 out of 5. 4 out of 5 jars of space mucus.
Nice. Very nice. Final thoughts?
I'm another really solid episode. I mean, as 2 for 2, you know, to this point. I really like things that we've all said already. I love the chemistry between the young characters. I love the way they're integrating the teacher characters into it. So, it feels like a coherent show. It's not just, okay, now let's see what the adults are up to, it's coming along very nicely so far. Yeah.
Cool. I love this episode. I really feel like it's part of the pilot. Like I think you said, John, because now we got all the characters, I think, introduced. And I just love the romance of it all because, they're younger than me, obviously, but I was that age once. So I still read books and watch TV shows and picture myself as one of the characters or something. And I think I could pull off a Caleb kind of vibe in my own mind. I enjoyed the romance. I enjoyed the episodic nature that it wasn't just continuing the same story still. And I just loved the casting. The cinematography in this episode and the first episode was amazing. Like feature quality, it almost made me think of like First Contact-ish. And it's for a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And I just loved the lighting, just everything in general. So I'm going to give it 5 out of 5 Verulian fire fruits.
Nice.
Chris, burn those nerve endings right off your tongue.
Yeah,
you already did with your Tarimadol. I was going to give this one a lower lower grade, like John. At first, I thought it was a little bit too teeny, a little bit too angsty. But again, in discussing it and remembering some of the funnier beats and some of the better character moments, that helps push it up a bit. And also just the Star Trekiness of it all, with the coming to terms with differences and finding a way forward with compromise and agreement and all that stuff with getting Beta Z to rejoin the Federation. It was really nice to see a functioning government at work. So, I mean, for that, and then on top of that,
something to aspire to,
right? On top of that, we had a Mozart opera prominently. So I'm going to go from my original assessment of like a 3.7 to a 4.7. See what I did there? Wow. 47. We found 47. because it is more than the sum of its parts, and all of its parts are actually pretty, pretty good. So I am glad that this show is progressing the way it is. And I hope to see more like this in the future. And we hope to hear what you think out there in YouTube land and anyone listening on our pod feed. The easiest way to give your comments about this episode of Star Trek Starfleet Academy is right here on our YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/AtrexPloration. You can also hit us up on Patreon if you want to support the show. That's patreon.com/TrekSploration. I'll be put a couple of new levels there if you want to check it out. You can also get us on Blue Sky, trexploration.bluesky.social. Send us an email, trexplorationpod@gmail.com. Send us a picture of your little creepy dolls, and we'll put them in the credits.
It's an action figure. Come on.
You can also send us an action figure in the mails at P.O. Box 542, Bayport, New York, 11705. That's P.O. Box 542, Bayport, New York, 11705. And Albie has a whole bunch of, like, PayPal links and QR codes and Venmo and Zelle and Cash App and what have you. And we want to thank all of you who support, watch, listen, and share Trexploration with all of your fellow Star Trek fans. We do it for you. We couldn't do it without you. Just remember, any comments that you send us may be used on a future episode of Trexploration. And speaking of future episodes, Albie, what is the name of the next episode of Starfleet Academy that we will be reviewing?
I don't know if we can say. Because the embargo says the Monday before the episode airs. So this would be the Friday before the episode airs.
So we're not even allowed to give out, like, they gave out episode names on all of the preview videos.
They had to go back and change them once I reminded them what the embargo said.
Okay.
Really? Yeah, because so if you watch it now, there's a point of, like, all the Latin well names.
I'm talking join about that. Join us next week.
Yeah, join us next week when you might hear John say. All right,
oh, no.
So never mind. Yes. So we'll be so okay.
It's going to be an episode of Starfleet Academy, and it'll probably be pretty good. I think there's some images of it out there. I don't know what to call it, but I have seen maybe some laser tag pictures on websites like StarTrek.com, so maybe it has to do with laser tag.
All right, well, spoiler.
Phaser the beautiful tag. John Irons, thank you for joining us. Thank you for being with us. Published author, most famously of 700 Esoteric Syllables About Your Mama, read by the audio version, Emo Phillips.
Please
where
don't
can people
that.
Get it?
Okay. Good. No, I'm sorry, Mr. Phillips. That's not. Thank you. Thank you for reading the three jokes that you read on stage. We hope to collaborate with you further in the future.
All right. Steve, what do you got
also
coming up?
Listen to Captain Game Show podcast.
Captain Game Show. That's Steve, what do you got coming up you can tease for people?
Well, I think I might make some YouTube videos in the near future.
Oh, okay.
And release those. Cool. Actually, to talk about a completely different show, I one of the other things I do on my channel, in addition to talking about Star Trek, is every once in a while I talk about classic MacGyver, and I have one of those coming out next week.
Nice.
As we're sitting here recording this, I haven't shot it yet. I'm doing that tomorrow. But, yeah, another I call it MacGyver after how his arch nemesis Murdoch would always scream his name as he died.
As he was falling from someplace.
Yeah, he was falling. He did that every single time. And I thought, there you go. So, yeah, that's coming up. And, you know, there's political stuff and some skits and sketches and whatnot. So, yeah, basically that.
And where on YouTube can they find you, Steve?
YouTube.com/Steve Shives.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, thank you so much, Steve, for being on show. We are humbled by your presence here with us.
Much appreciated. Thanks for hanging in there for the extra long session.
Yeah, we appreciate your unique point of view.
I was only too happy to wait for you to show up.
That was last week.
This week, everything was right on time.
Right.
Last week, I was only too happy to wait for you to show up. This week, I have no complaints whatsoever.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
This week, it felt like we were just like a couple minutes and got started.
It's true.
All right. So thank you so much, Steve, the beautiful John Irons. Really appreciate you both joining us. And thank you for joining us for this episode of Trexploration. Remember to like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell so you can watch every review of Starfleet Academy. We have great guests such as Steve coming up the rest of this season, some returning guests and some new guests. So very exciting times. And we really appreciate the whole Star Trek community helping us out. It makes us feel very happy and warm and fuzzy. So for Trexploration, I'm Albie.
I'm Chris.
I'm John.
I'm Steve.
And guys, let's build a fort. Que le pardonne la clémence au mon Dieu, le ramène vers toi. Mon Dieu, le ramène ces jours vers toi, ces jours vers toi, le ramène en ces jours, mon Dieu.